This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. Well, like the rest of the football world, we're taking a minute to celebrate the life of one of the country's greatest and most natural goal scorers. His 44 in 57 caps for England puts him fourth in the all-time scoring list behind Wayne Rooney, Sir Bobby Charlton and Gary Lineker. He still holds the record for the most in the English top flight, with 357 in the Football League First Division. In total, he scored 491 in all competitions, and he went on to be one half of ITV's era-defining football programme, Saint and Greavesy. He passed away at the weekend at the age of 81, the legend that was Jimmy Greaves. With all the fervour connected to the delayed Euro 2020s in the summer, it might have escaped your attention that there was a familiar-ish name in Chile's lineup against Brazil in the Copa America at the start of July. Blackburn Rovers' Ben Brereton was born in Stoke. He made his name at Nottingham Forest and was top scorer for England's under-19s when they won the Euros in 2017, playing alongside Mason Mount. But his mum, Andrea's Chilean heritage, was brought to the attention of the country's FA late last year after a social media campaign to get him selected, and he was called up in May for their games with Argentina, Bolivia, Uruguay and Brazil. He's also now transitioned into Ben Brereton Diaz. And the first thing that comes to mind, Ben, is all that admin connected with changing your name, mate. Have you had to do your passport, your driving licence, your bank accounts, your have you had to do everything?
In England at the minute, all my stuff's still Ben Brereton, you know, my ID and my passport, but all my Chilean passport, my Chilean licence and everything over there is Diaz. So in England, it's Brereton, and in Chile, it's Diaz. But obviously, on the back of my shirt, it's Brereton Diaz now, which I made a decision on, and I'm happy that I made a decision on that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all your sort of relatives in Chile must be immensely, immensely proud that this has happened.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I'm being honest with you, I've met them probably once when I was 6 months old, and I went over there when I was younger, you know. So I've never seen any of the family over in Chile, you know. So definitely, that's something that I do want to do. I didn't have time to do it when I went over last time because it was just so many games and it was in the COVID. So I struggled to see family then. I've seen a few, but struggled to see all of them. But definitely, I would like to go over there again and see all the family, yeah, because I think they were chuffed with me sending me all messages and that, so definitely, yeah.
Should we just set the scene? Mum Chilean, but am I right in thinking when you were born, she'd not long been in England, so there was no speaking of Spanish at home when you were growing up because Mum was still trying to master English? Have I got that right?
Yeah. My mum came over and she was... around 14, 15, around that. I can't remember the exact, but around that time, and with my granddad and her two sisters. And yeah, she came over, she didn't know any English and stuff like that. So when I was born, and she didn't really speak any English, you know, but she was learning. But when she was learning, she didn't really speak Spanish to me because it was hard for her to pick up the English if she was still speaking Spanish. So she kind of forgot about speaking Spanish and was learning English. And if you met my mum now, you'd think she's from born in England. You know, you couldn't tell she's from Chile the way she speaks English. But now I talk to all my family now a little bit of Spanish to keep it ticking over. I'm doing lessons twice a week, so hopefully I'll pick it up sooner than later. You know.
Do you know what? I came to see you about 8 weeks ago for Football Focus, and as a result, I've discovered an app called Duolingo, where I don't know if you've seen that yourself. It's and if you're a real cheapskate, you can dodge the adverts, and you have to play one every so often, but then you get all these freebies. And I've been picking up Yo Soy Un Hombre and all the rest of it, and trying to. And it's as a result of talking to you. Are you the same? Are you mastering it quite quickly?
I've been on Duolingo for quite a bit now, but it's like, I struggle to do it on that type of stuff. So, I mean, I need someone to talk to me with it and stuff like that. So I've got a teacher twice a week, but I've been picking up little things on Duolingo. But personally, for me, it's not worked for me. But I do it here and there before bed, cut off an hour or something like that with a girlfriend. But I'm picking up slowly. But I'm not a master at it yet. But hopefully soon I'll be good. Yeah.
We all have very different learning styles, Ben. That's the thing, isn't it? Listen, had you at any point before about a year ago considered the possibility that Chile might be interested in you?
A year ago, not the slightest. You know, I've I only got told about it when I was last season, Preston away, just after the game, you know, they was looking and stuff like that. And now, to be honest, right then, I wasn't thinking much about it. I just thought, wow, like, imagine if that happened. It wasn't in my mind that I'm going off and like, I just got to keep playing football. And then when it came down to it and they suggested it to me, it was a no-brainer for me. And I wasn't considering anything else, but that such a big team like that have want me to go play for me, it was just a massive honour, and I had no hesitation in doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the short version, but there was this social media campaign. There was this hashtag, Burton a la Roja, and it all kind of took off. So did you become aware of that? Are you on socials yourself? Did you see it starting to create a groundswell of attention?
No, definitely, yeah. I'm on socials, but I'm not that keen on it, but I am on it. I do see stuff on it, and because I've done a in one of the Blackburn programs, I'd done an A to Z, and they asked me a question, something that people don't know about me, and I said that I was half Chilean, and this was about, I want to say, 2-3 years ago, right. And then someone picked that up. So when I scored a couple of goals and that, someone picked that up, and then this whole Football Manager thing started as well, and yeah, it got around quick, and by the time I knew it, they was asking if I wanted to go play for them. Yeah, so it was crazy time. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine how you felt once you'd got selected and realised you were going to be boarding a plane. And this is a squad with Claudio Bravo, with Arturo Vidal, with Alexi Sanchez. It's 7,000 miles away. You must have been absolutely, well, I'll do the clean version of this. You must have been very nervous, Ben.
No, definitely. It was definitely, as soon as I got called up, obviously I'm happy. And obviously the night before I'm flying, I'm starting to get nervous, you know, because it's such a big deal, you know, and so the players that in the Chile squad is just incredible what they've done over the years, you know, won the Copa America twice and stuff like that. And just being a great team together, you know, and they've been together for a long time. And definitely going over there was nerve wracking for me, just if I get accepted and stuff like that, you know, for me being from England. But it was just brilliant. The moment I got there, I felt at home, you know, and all the lads and all the coaches and the whole country got behind me. And I was, even though I didn't speak Spanish, everyone was brilliant with me. And it really helped me to get through the weeks I was over there. And it was a brilliant experience for me, yeah.
Mm. Did you do a lot of research in advance to kind of show some respect to the sort of cultural boundaries and things like that? Were you busy on Wikipedia reading up on the country's history and all that kind of stuff?
No, definitely. I mean, even before I had any contention of going over there to play for him, I knew about the history and stuff like that because my granddad's, he just loves Chile. Do you know what I mean? My granddad does, and he don't stop talking about it, all that part of the family, my mum and that. So, do you know what I mean? I already knew a lot about the country, and I watched, when I was younger, I watched Chile play, but parties, like, you know, parties around the granddad's house, or we had a party for Chile, you know, and I've always watched them when I was younger and that, but definitely I knew about the history, and it was just about learning more of it and going over there and understanding it, and it was brilliant, yeah. It was an experience I won't forget.
What about the national anthem? Did you really have to work on that?
So I'll be honest with you, the national anthem, I've listened to it, I've tried to learn it, but when I went over there for the Copa America and the World Cup qualifiers the first time, because I didn't speak any Spanish, it was kind of hard for me to remember the words and put it all together. But I know how the song goes, like the rhythm of the song and how it goes, like the music, but over there, when I was lining up in the national anthem, I didn't sing it because when I want to sing it, I want to know all the words perfectly, not make a mistake. So hopefully that will come in however long it'll come, but I'm learning it, and hopefully that'll come. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, does somebody orchestrate that with you? Did you explain to the coach, look, I'd rather get it right than be seen to be getting it wrong, etc.? Did you actually discuss it, or were you left to your own devices on that? Because you know what it's like over here when England gets scrutinised doing it. Yeah. There's a lot of it. We're all looking at the players' mouths and how heartily they're doing it, etc. Did you actually discuss it with the coach?
No, I think it was kind of new. Do you know what I mean? And over in Chile, they all sing it with passion. You know, all the players when they're standing there. But I think the lads knew that I couldn't sing it, so I just stood there proud. You know, and hopefully when I go over there again, I can sing it. You know, when I get it right. So yeah.
Ben, it feels like a surreal experience. You know, your debut, your first start, and your score. I mean, it's so far away, with the greatest respect to your granddad, it's so far away from what you're used to, your upbringing. I mean, it must have been an extraordinary experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a different environment for me, you know, and the players over there are brilliant, and it was just the game as well. It's a lot different than over here, and it was just taking everything day by day, you know, learning from and training like the players, and it's just taking it all in, to be honest with you. Like, now it feels a long time ago now, but it was something that was still in me, but it was just taking day by day and just getting through it, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, I mean, those on-field prompts and stuff are obviously in Spanish, are the sort of fairly universal words or noises that players make on the field to leave the ball, to step over, to go front post, to go back post, whatever it is?
Yeah, on the pitch was a lot easier because I think some of the players that they've played in England, some of the players playing Italy, Germany, you know, so on the pitch was a lot easier and a lot easier to communicate than off the pitch. Off the pitch was a bit harder, but off the pitch it was just a lot of fun and a lot of just banter. I don't speak any Spanish, stuff like that. So they all set me a nice. But on the pitch, it was kind of like, we're all footballers. We know what we've got to do. And let's say if I want to do something right, they'd have a go at me. But I wouldn't know what they had said, but they'd have a go at me. And I know not to do that again. But you pick it up. Like on the pitch, I picked up little words in Spanish, you know, like the basics of how to do it. And I'm learning that now, all the basics. The first thing I'm doing now is learning on the pitch. And then I'll learn off the pitch after,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, you've had some experiences, you've played with and against some top, top players, but when you're lining up against Messi for Argentina and obviously coming on for Alexis Sanchez against Brazil at halftime and there's Neymar on the other side, there's a bit of a wow factor there as well, isn't there?
No, definitely, you know, and I think it was against Argentina and I came off the bench, and at the time, when you come on, I was nervous and excited to play a game. I wasn't really concentrating on Messi. You know, it sounds crazy, but after the game, I kind of sat back and realized, well, wow, what that's great to do that, you know. And it was just a great moment for me to get my first appearance for Chile. But to play against those type of players, and it's a great experience for me, and I've just got to learn from it, you know, and move on to club and country football, yeah.
What about life since? You are the face of Pepsi in Chile for a start, so you had to do an ad for them?
Yeah, I mean, I was meant to fly home, and then my agent rang me and said, "Hey, Pepsi want to do a little commercial with you out in Chile," and it was like, wow, well, I best stay and get it done then, because it was like a great opportunity, and you know what I mean, it was Pepsi end of the day, and I'd done that anyway. I was there for a full day, no one spoke any English, but I just got it done, you know, and everyone and it was just a mad experience, you know, and to do a Pepsi advert and a commercial over there, and it was brilliant, yeah. I really enjoyed it.
You do have a good bit of backup, though, in the form of mum, don't you? Because if you need her, if you're in a fix or anything like that, she's there to translate, including doing your socials for you. She translates them into Spanish for you.
Yeah, she's loving it. She's loving it at the minute. So, yeah, so any post I do, I just type the English and send it over, and she'll send me back the translated version. I'll just put it on, so she feels involved in it all, so that's good to have, you know. She's loving it in a minute, yeah.
Yeah, well, she deserves to love it, doesn't she? She must be very proud of her boy and that journey. Obviously, there was a lot of controversy and kerfuffle over the release or non-release of English players in the last round of World Cup qualifiers. It's been sorted and you've done a deal. You're going to play in two of the next three World Cup qualifiers for Chile.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, last one just gone, I wasn't able to go, and I was upset about that, you know, and you've got to understand from both country and club the reason and stuff like that, but that is what it is now, that's done with, and it was just something that's happened, but over, yeah, the next one, I think they made a deal, if footballers aren't exempt, I can go for two games. If they are, I can go for three. So we'll have to see what happens with the red countries and stuff like that. But I'm just happy that they've come to an agreement that I can get over there and play for a couple of games and then get back to the club. Yeah, so I'm happy about that.
I think in the current circumstances, if you'd as we're recording this on the official EFL podcast, if you'd stayed for the third, it would have meant quarantining and missing four games. Whereas if you come back after the second one, I think you might only have to miss one or two. How has it helped to develop your game at Blackburn, Ben?
I just think the experience has matured me as a person and a player, you know, to go over there and not know anything and just the style of football, I've definitely brought a bit more aggression and stuff back over here, and it's just matured me as a football player and as a person, and I feel brilliant. I feel I've got a lot of confidence and a lot of motivation, and I just feel good at the minute, yeah, and I'm happy to be playing for Blackburn and we're doing well at the minute. We're top six now. We're at the sixth place. We've got a good point against Barnsley, a tough place to go, and we've just got to keep grinding. And we've got a young team, but the boys are doing brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, and that confidence, I mean, there's a change of role for you as well this season, because obviously Adam Armstrong has gone last season. You're hitting the net a little bit more regularly. Do you feel that weight of responsibility, but also are you ready for it as a result of, yes, the grounding you've had so far, but obviously as a result of the experience that you had in the summer?
No, definitely. I feel good, and we all know how good Armour done when he was here, and he scored a lot of goals for us, and that's what happens when he's done so well. He gets a move to the Prem, you know. And now me and Gally, Tyrese, and the strikers, we've got to do the best to keep scoring goals, you know. And I'm happy that I've scored a few goals this season already, but I just got to keep going, and hopefully we can keep scoring and function as a team. Yeah.
Yeah. How have your teammates taken to your newfound fame on the other side of the world?
When I first got back, it was a lot of banner and stuff like that, you know. But now it's all settled down. Now they just. I'm just Ben, you know, just around the dressing room, just me, and it's the lads will take the banner and that, but it is what it is. It's good fun.
Listen, it's a great story. Thanks for sharing. Send our love to Andrea, won't you? Adios.
Well done. Adios. Thank you.
Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, 24 hours after it was announced that their owner was to put them into administration, Derby County recorded the equivalent of only their third win in half a season. Max Bird was on target on his 21st birthday as they picked up 3 points against Stoke City. Comeback of the season to date was at Kenilworth Road, where Swansea City drew with Luton Town despite being 3-0 down at half-time. And after 13 league games without a win, Nottingham Forest picked up maximum points at resurgent Huddersfield Town with caretaker manager Stephen Reid at the helm following the sacking of Chris Hughton.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
That Forest win, coupled with those in Sky Bet League One for Ipswich Town, Crewe Alexandra and Doncaster Rovers, means not a single EFL team is yet to taste victory this season. Doncaster's success giving us the perfect opportunity to speak to recently retired club legend turned advisor and mentor to the club, James Coppinger. And of course, we spoke to you just as your finale was looming. So the first question has to be, what do you advise and mentor the club on?
It's player development manager. So, you know, I've been at the club 17 years. Over 800 league games, predominantly in and around League One, Championship. So there's a lot of young lads at the club that we want to develop and turn into sort of seasoned professionals. And it's almost mentoring them, giving them the right advice, been in and around the training ground, putting plans in place for them to improve and develop as players and people.
Yeah, so this is related to what we've discussed previously, which is this is what you had been working towards. This is a particular passion of yours. You feel that it's not just a matter of developing people as footballers, but developing decent human beings, right values and beliefs, understanding of how the world goes around, all the stuff off the field as well.
Yeah, I've actually just wrote a book about it. So it's called Ahead of the Game, A Professional Mindset. So it's forward by Sir Kenny Dalglish, who was kind enough to do the forward. And yeah, like we spoke before, I believe that the mental side of the game is the most important side of the game. So being there, being able to guide and help holistically is something that I'm really passionate about. But also with helping Doncaster Rovers, it's a win-win for me and something that, again, I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. I can actually see you. I can please report, listeners, to the official EFL podcast. He hasn't gone to seed yet as a result of finishing player. It is only 3 months, but his face still looks every bit. Your face looks even thinner than it used to when you were playing. Are you uber conscious of the fact you've got to hang on to your physicality and be careful with what you eat rather than go the other way just because you don't need to do the things you used to have to do as a player?
Definitely not. I'm enjoying my food. I've never really been a big drinker, but I do exercise. I've joined a tennis club, a squash club. So I'm really enjoying the fact that I don't have to... I haven't got that nagging voice in the back of my mind, you know, saying you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. You've got training in the morning. And the constant sort of preparation of a match day. That's probably the first time I've ever had that, or not had that feeling for a good 15, 16 years. So that's the one thing when I sort of did hang up my boots that, you know, I can relax a little bit more. But at the same time, this new role still has the pressures of winning. And that's what it's about, you know. I get as much satisfaction seeing players that I'm working with be successful and improve and develop than I did as a player, probably even more so if I'm being honest.
So just to be absolutely clear, we're not just talking about the next generation. Some of the people you're working with are actually in and around the first team squad, are playing for the team.
Yeah, so it's the first team squad, the sort of younger age group between 18 and 23, the 18s as well. So I'll be putting programmes together for them as well. Yeah, I've got a quite a big responsibility, but something that I'm really passionate about. You know, I've been doing this for 5 years, so I've formed my company 5 years ago, and I've worked with players all across the EFL, the Scottish Premier League. So yeah, it's something that I'm enjoying, and I'm getting really positive feedback with it as well. You know, the manager, Richie Wellens, Noel Hunt, players that, you know, have been successful. They speak about character, about mentality, about this side of the game as well. So it's good that, you know, I'm doing it and then buying into it as well.
Yeah, I mean, James, was there ever a temptation not to stick with a setup that you know, to maybe have a completely clean sweep, or was it hard to resist the lure of a place that you know so well?
Yeah, I think there was that sort of, you know, I can go and work with different clubs and different players, but, you know, I absolutely adore Doncaster. You know, I've been there 17 years. I've had a lot of ups and downs, and the club are ambitious. You know, they want to go to the next level. They want to try new things. They're constantly evolving. It's something that really sort of appealed to me. You know, the chief exec, the owners, everybody involved with the club, they want to do it the right way, and it's something that I believe, you know, it'll take time, but eventually we'll get there.
Right, serious stuff this, and this kind of relates to the situation that your team have been through, that Crewe have been through, that Ipswich went through, and that Nottingham Forest went through. This whole horrible feeling of when you get 6-7 games in and you still haven't got a win. What are you encountering, the people that you're mentoring and advising? You're part of the inner circle, as I've just said, with Richie Wellens and with Noel Hunt. What are you dealing with here?
It's tough, you know, as a footballer, and everybody involved with football, fans as well. The new season, you want to get off with a win, or you want to get a win under your belt as soon as possible, and the longer that goes, the harder it is. From my perspective and the manager and coach's perspective, it's about creating that positive environment regardless of result. You know, there's one certain fact is that you're going to lose games and you're going to have disappointing performances, so it's how you respond to that. This weekend, obviously, was our first win. It wasn't our best performance by any stretch of the imagination, probably our worst. But to get 3 points, to have that monkey off your back, is one of the best feelings in football. So, you know, it's been tough. We've had some really good performances and got beat. So it's about maintaining standards every single day in training, and make sure that every single player understands that, you know, if you keep doing the right things or keep trying to do the right things, eventually the results will turn.
Yeah, but as you will know from all the work you've done with your book, from all the work you've done with other players and what you went through yourself, there's also that little chatterbox that sits on your shoulder going, are you sure you've got this right? Do you need to chop and change? Maybe the sort of central ethos of your team is not correct. And doesn't all that come once you get into game 3, 4, 5 and you haven't picked up a win yet? Isn't there that temptation to start tinkering?
There is definitely that temptation, but for us, we've not had that luxury, if I'm being honest. You know, we had 2 positive tests of COVID. We had 10 isolations in pre-season. We fielded a team against Bradford, 2 halves, with 3 of our players. The rest were trialists. We've had no front players. In fact, we've had 1 front player who's on loan from Watford, an 18-year-old, Thiago Suka. And then that was it. You know, for the first 5 games, we struggled. So we didn't have any options. We were dealing with You know, a group of players that were playing game after game after game, had no pre-season, but yet they would have to play Saturday, Tuesday. We beat Walsall in the Carabao Cup on penalties. So then we had to play Stoke when we could have done with a rest. So it's been hectic. You know, deadline day was another one that was difficult for us, but we got through. So probably the first real test and the first real game where, you know, you've got a full squad and you can go for it was this week where we got the win.
Mm. Are you doing a little bit of help to the manager himself? Are you having a few quiet moments with him? And if so, you know, how do you motivate the motivator, so to speak?
Yeah, sometimes it isn't motivation. It's trying to give him a different perspective, you know, take the emotion out of it and give him a total different viewpoint on where we're at. I've been at the club 17 years, so I know how the club works. I know where the club's at. Sometimes your expectation as a manager can be totally different to where the fans are, where the owners are. But fortunate at Doncaster that everybody's on the same page. Everybody's aligned with where we are right now and where we want to be. So communicating that to the manager, communicating that to the players, for me personally, is the biggest thing. You know, been at the club that long, been in teams where we've had that, and been in teams where we haven't had that, where it's been a little disjointed and you effectively don't get the results you want. So I have a huge responsibility, or feel a huge responsibility, to the manager, the coaches, the players, to make sure that they're prepared every single day to perform at their best.
But, you know, if you're talking about your particular manager, he's a really interesting character, isn't he? Because on the one hand, he'll be fortified by the fact that 15, 16 months ago, he achieved the League Two title with Swindon Town. On the other hand, his last managerial experience at Salford City didn't really work out. So I guess you've got a guy that's got confidence, know his methods work, James, but on the other hand, has had a little bit of a punch in the guts and, you know, might be a little bit vulnerable along the way as well. So people in that situation are very interesting for you to deal with.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I know Richie well. I played with him. He expected a lot as a player. He demanded a lot from players around him, and he had high standards of himself. He hasn't changed as a manager, but sometimes you have to be able to adapt to the situations that you're in and you find yourself. And that's why it's a testament to him and how he goes about his managerial sort of processes. He takes people's opinions on board, not just mine, everybody, the staff, you know, goalkeeper, coach, analyst. Like you say, Noel Hunt is assistant manager. He takes everybody's opinion on board and makes a calculated decision. And, you know, not every manager's like that. So it's nice for me to see that, you know, transitioning from player into this role that, you know, he buys into what we're trying to do. But again, he's a fantastic manager in terms of how he wants his teams to play. But ultimately, it's about winning. You know, he's a winner. And when he loses a game, he's like everybody else. You know, it affects you. But again, 24-hour rule, which you try and work to, is regardless of whether you win or lose, you've got 24 hours to get over it. And then you start again on Monday, because it's a clean slate. You can't affect what has just happened.
Yeah, that's the great thing about football, isn't it? There is no time for moping around for even days on end, certainly not weeks on end. There's an opportunity to right wrongs coming up within sometimes 2 or 3 days, sometimes 6 or 7 days.
Yeah, and he spoke to the players about this. You know, he was on a course with some Olympic rowers, and you know, they have to wait 3 months before the next race. And you know, if you lose that race, then it's a long time before your next one. But for us, it's, you know, we lose on a Saturday sometimes, or the majority of the time you've got a game on a Tuesday to put it right. So if you look at it from that perspective, we're fortunate to be able to do that. And you know, I heard the Brentford manager say the same thing. You know, he'll enjoy a glass of red wine. They won 2-0 at the weekend, but they're the same, you know, 24-hour rule. We've got another game and we have to prepare for another game, and it starts again. That creates consistency. And again, that's what you're after.
Yeah, I dare say Thomas Frank's glass of red wine would be a little bit more, not even the top shelf of Marx's having got promoted to the Premier League. It's probably going to be from some vintage cellar somewhere now, isn't it? Mate, these are great insights. And I hope anybody listening to this is just getting a little glimpse into what it is like. Maybe your club, listeners, is one of the ones that did have a tough start to the season. And these are brilliant insights from somebody that's right at the inner sanctum of Doncaster. So if you're a Crewe fan, or you are an Ipswich fan, or you are a Forest fan, I hope you've had a little sort of look into what might have been going on at your football club. Although in the case of Nottingham Forest, one of your former clubs, James Coppinger, just a dramatic end result after changing the manager. And I kind of feel for Chris Hughton a bit. On the other hand, I suppose Stephen Reid, it's a complete free hit, isn't it? He can sort of, he kind of knows that Steve Cooper is coming in. He can go for it in his own style to try and effect a win, as he did at the weekend.
And you don't know whether that's him. You know, I played a Reedy for England when I was younger, followed his career, and he's done really well over the last few years, you know, with Scotland as well. But I think, you know, like you said, you feel sorry for the manager because a lot of the time that happens. You know, I don't know whether it's a freedom from the players, whether they're almost playing consciously, there was too much information or whatever it was. But when that happens, yeah, it's tough to take, especially the manager will be sat there thinking, well, that might have happened if I was in charge.
Yeah. On the other hand, I think he did make some pretty plucky decisions, not least of which Chris Hughton's last act was to change his goalkeeper. The goalkeeper that came in made an absolute howler, so he was willing to change him back. He brought back Lewis Grabham at the weekend, who I think has been sort of starting on the bench and things. So big decisions for a caretaker manager to take, particularly when you bear in mind that he might still have a role to play in the new regime coming in. So, you know, sometimes it's easier for a caretaker to sit on the fence, isn't it?
It depends who the person is. You know, for him, he'll be seeing them every single day. He might have different opinions to the manager, but you know, it's worked for him. You know, if it hadn't have worked, we'd have having a different conversation, and that's what football's about. You know, you have to make the decisions you think are right at that time, at that moment. And who knows who the next manager's going to be and whether he's still going to be involved.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people do feel it, Steve Cooper. In fact, by the time people listen to this, actually, possibly it'll have been announced, but I think a deal has been done with Swansea because obviously Steve Cooper left Swansea right on the start of the season. So I think that side of things has certainly been taken care of at the point at which we're recording this week's episode of the Official EFL podcast. Bournemouth starting to look like the real deal at the top of the Championship, one of only two unbeaten teams in the whole of the EFL, James?
Yeah, I think for me personally, Bournemouth are one of the favourites. You know, they've tasted Premier League football, they've got a fantastic group of players, and when they get it right, they're unstoppable. They've had a fantastic start, and again, it's momentum, you know, that word. You know, when you do pick up results and you do start to click as a group, as a team, it can take you for as long as you want. You know, Sheffield United did it for three or four seasons. I speak to people there and they almost described it as riding a wave, and that has to start somewhere. And if you can ride that wave for long enough, it can take you, a long way through the season.
Yeah, and I think there's, I'm not going to say it's an element of luck, but, you know, somebody like Jadon Anthony came in and also Jordan Zamora. You know, the squad was a little bit thin in the summer. Scott Parker had to kind of throw them in out of necessity in the opening game, but they've made themselves almost first names on the team sheet. So again, sometimes moments of adversity can create opportunity for individuals.
It can as well with Scott Parker, you know, coming into a new club, understanding what it takes to get promoted out of that division. And, you know, having that sort of structure already there, you know, they've done it once and then they know what it takes, you know, as a club, they've backed him to the hilt. And I think a good start is so important. You know, I think this is the first time, speaking from our perspective, the first time we've been able to gain momentum. And it's huge. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Bournemouth go on and get more results.
Although on the other hand, it's probably ready to play championship cliche number one, because Blackpool had had no wins at all, suddenly get 2 out of 3. Fulham were undefeated, suddenly lose 2 out of 3. So this is the division where anybody can beat anybody, isn't it, James?
Yeah, you know, we were the same when we got promoted to the championship. I think we beat Derby on the opening day when we first got promoted. And then you go through spells where anybody can beat anybody. You know, on your day, if you perform as the most of the teams are strong in that division. You know, Blackpool came up last season, sneaked into the playoffs, and then finished third. And then, like you say, got promoted. They're on a high. And then, like you say, Middlesbrough are finding it tough.
Indeed, they are. Let's just leave that one hanging in the air for a few split seconds, shall we? Two incidents I want to discuss. I'll go the Peterborough one first of all. So Peterborough won 3-0 against Birmingham at the weekend. Christy Pym, their goalkeeper, was dropped by your former manager at Doncaster, Darren Ferguson, after what Darren described as overstepping the mark after the midweek defeat to Reading. He was replaced by debutant David Cornell, and Darren Ferguson has said it will be hard for Pym to get back into his plans. Is there a little sort of rumour mill that goes around where we know exactly what happened there, or shall we just surmise that maybe, I don't know, he's had a go at the rest of his teammates, or stood up to the manager for criticism, or anyway.
I think it must have been something to overstep the mark with Darren, if I'm being honest.
So Darren would have sort of further lines to get to than a lot of managers, would he, before he would make a decision like this?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think he's a reasonable man, a fantastic manager. I think we spoke about it last time I was on. So for something like that to happen and for him to come out and say that, it must have been something that warranted it.
The other incident we have got to talk about was possibly the most extraordinary thing I've ever seen on the football field. You're laughing. I wonder if you know what's coming here. So obviously, Swansea came back from 3-0 down, as I said a little bit earlier, to draw 3-3 at Luton Town. But there was a moment in the game where Henry Lansbury of Luton, well, quite simply scythed down Swansea's Ryan Manning. Have you seen it? Have you seen it from the couple of angles that are doing the rounds? I mean, if anybody hasn't, please do have a look at it. Some have tried to justify it and said Ryan Manning kicked the ball away just as Henry Lansbury was about to take a free kick. There's no way that was the case. Is the cops? I mean, he just bunched him in the air.
I think it's a tough one. I genuinely, when I first saw it, no, honestly, when I first saw it, I thought it's definitely a red card. I played with Henry Lansbury at Nottingham Forest. Not really, it's out of character, really. He's not that type of player. I think they were 3-0 up at the time. So there wasn't any reason for him to do that, really. I could understand if they were 3-0 down, but I think they were winning 3-0. But what I don't understand is why he's walking over the ball. So I would have probably booked the other player, if I'm being honest.
Is that it? Is that all you're giving me? Talk about looking after your own there. I mean, are you telling me he couldn't stop the flow through and stop himself connecting with Manning's shin?
I think it's a freebie. I think it's a freebie, if I'm being honest. You know, he knows, if he knows, he knows that, you know, he's going to get away with it because he shouldn't be there. He shouldn't be anywhere near the ball. It's like when you go in for a tackle and you hear the whistle go and the ball's there and you can almost, I think I would have booked the other lad, to be fair.
And not Lansbury.
Nah.
Football is all about opinions, isn't it? And I've had this little bee in my bonnet.
Why would you? So you would book Lansbury based on what, that you thought he kicked out purposely?
Yes, he bunched Manning in the air. The kid fell to the floor. I mean, there's no way.
But what is he doing there? What is he actually doing there?
It's not an excuse. What are you going to do?
But he's trying to kick the ball. So he's trying to play the ball, and the lad shouldn't be there. As he's going to kick the ball, he's kicked the ball. So again, it's a freebie. I think he knows what he's doing, but it's a free hit, isn't it?
Okay, so when you're driving down the road through a little village and all of a sudden some old lady steps out to cross the road in front of you, because she's in the wrong going in the path of the car and technically you have right of way, it's all right to just drive over her, is it? Is that what we're saying?
I think we're on two different pages here.
We are on two different pages, there's no doubt about it. I'm telling you loud and clear, Henry Lansbury did not have the right to kick Manning in the air because he was standing in his way.
So you think a straight red?
Yeah, I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Right.
We'll continue this one off air, shall we? Meanwhile, elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, Wigan Athletic are the new leaders after their fourth consecutive win. That's after Sunderland surrendered a two-goal lead to draw at Fleetwood Town. And Saido Berahino scored his first goal back in English football as Sheffield Wednesday drew at home to Shrewsbury Town. Wednesday mid-table, Portsmouth mid-table, Charlton at the time of recording this week's official EFL podcast in the bottom four. The big clubs are not having it their own way, are they?
We've played both of them. We played Sheffield Wednesday away when they were up there, 24,000, you know, a massive, massive club expected to, well, a huge expectation. You know, after that result of the weekend, I think they got beat against Morecambe away.
They did.
And they got beat against Plymouth away. So it's been difficult. I think they're getting a little bit of stick at the minute because, again, the expectation level at Sheffield Wednesday is massive. And we played Portsmouth at home and drew 0-0, and they were at the top end of that. I think they'd won the first three games when we played them. So there's some big clubs in this division. We played Wigan away, like you said, top of the league.
Looking the real deal? I mean, you know, obviously we had Liam Richardson on a couple of weeks ago. It looks as though a lot of the cleaning up has been done. It looks as though he's got a very good relation with the club's new owners. Are they the real deal? Could they stay the distance, do you think?
They've got experience in every single position. And you know, if they can't win by performing well, they know how to win games, or they will know how to win games. So, you know, seeing their result of the weekend at Accrington, because again, we've been there and it's not an easy place to go, quite a convincing win, Charlie White scoring his first goals, or his first goal. So yeah, I think they've got a good chance, and like I said, there's some really good clubs and big clubs in this division, and it's going to be tough.
Yeah, who else has impressed you? Who surprised you a little bit this season?
I don't know. I think, you know, Oxford did well last year, although they got beat at the weekend. They're always sort of a dark horse. MK Dons.
Yeah, doing very well, aren't they?
Yeah, I think last season they were pretty much like ourselves. They were flirting around the bottom of the league at the start of the season, and they were trying to implement sort of a philosophy and a way of playing. You know, we played against them and you couldn't get the ball off them, but they couldn't score goals. Whereas this season they've almost sort of lost their manager but kept their style of play, and they're scoring goals and doing really well. So, you know, when you go to the like, I remember going to the MK Dons and getting beat 5-0, and when I came off I wanted to retire. You know, and they passed us off the park. And that was probably, we won the league that season actually, but you know, it's a tough place to go, and you know, every time you play them you're going to be running around chasing the ball. So they've impressed me already this season. But you know, the big clubs with the bigger budgets, with the players that know what it takes at this level, it's a real tough division this year.
Do you know what? We should pay tribute, shouldn't we, to Liam Manning, the new head coach at MK Dons, because effectively he's had to drop straight in, obviously, with the time span. None of the recruitment, I think, or very little of it, will have been his. He's effectively had to adopt all the preparation that Russ Martin had done before he went off to Swansea, hit the ground running, go for it, and here they are sitting third.
But it's testament to how the club are doing it, or how the club have done it. You know, they've implemented, or they've brought in a head coach, and they've got a style of play. They've recruited the right players, and then they've brought in a similar type of head coach again, or a similar manager that's just going to pick up where they left off. They haven't ripped up the sort of sheet and gone, right, we're going to start again. We're going to bring in a manager who doesn't play this style of football and doesn't suit this group of players. And so far, it's working for them. And I suspect as the season goes on, they'll do exactly the same.
Are you, as you look up from the bottom of the table, first mention of it, do you sort of look at the clubs that are, in your opinion, worse than you, just above you, and think, okay, we've got this. We can get ourselves out of this.
I don't look at the table when when results aren't going well, I just don't see what I'm going to gain from that. You know, as a player, I was the same. I genuinely I don't, you know, even if we get beat or we struggle at the weekend, I find it hard to watch or look at football for a couple of days. It's that bad, and it does eat away. You know, as a player, I wasn't that bad, but as in this role, you feel almost responsible. So I don't look at the table. You know, if we get a few more wins, or as we get a few more wins, I'll probably start to have a look at it. But you know, we've had a tough run in. We played Rotherham away as well, who again were a Championship side last year. They've been together 4 years. They've got established Championship players in their team, and we've almost been in every game this season. That's the positive that we can take out of it. You know, Portsmouth at home, we should have won. Sheffield Wednesday away, we missed a penalty. There's little things that haven't gone for us. Whereas this week, we didn't play as well. The other team we played against could have had a penalty, and we win 1-0. And you know, that's the joy of football.
You are your own man, aren't you? Don't look at the tables when things aren't going well and things. Just before we moved on, are you ready to come round to my way of thinking on Henry Lansbury? Have you had a few seconds for it to digest, or do I need to move on and give you to the end of the podcast before we appeal to the EFL to give him a red instead of that yellow he got? I'll leave that one there as well. Meanwhile, in Sky Bet League 2, it was the first defeat of the season for Harrogate Town at Port Vale. Matt Stevens notched his sixth goal of the campaign as Forest Green Rovers retook top spot with a 4-0 win at Stevenage, and Scunthorpe United surrendered a two-goal lead to draw at Carlisle United. It's now just one league win in 18 for Scunthorpe. I've picked Leighton Orient out this time around. I mean, they're currently sitting second. Very experienced manager in Kenny Jackett. Lots of promotions to his name. Lots of ambition there as well. Have they tickled your fancy as well so far, James?
Yeah, I think Kenny Jackett, you know, when he went there, it was a massive coup for them. Like you said, he's got bags of experience. He knows what it takes to get promoted. And yeah, building on last season, they've started this season really, really well. And again, build momentum. And they've got players that can score goals and hurt you. It's the same with Harrogate. You know, we played Harrogate pre-season. We beat them narrowly, but they've been together a long, long time, and I genuinely feel like it's about instilling that belief and that togetherness at that level, at every level, but more so at that level. And if you can do that, and if you can do that early doors, you can find yourself high up that table.
Is there somebody at the door? Do you need to go and answer it, or is that okay?
I think we're all right.
Good. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. You're still as brimming as you were as a player. You're still full of little analogies. It's just a shame you're so misguided on the subject of that incredible thing. But the good thing is you can start work on your new book, and you can use the title "It's All Right for One Footballer to Gratuitously Kick Another One in the Air." It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Let's just blame the person that's on the floor. There you go. Take that away. See if your publishers will publish that for you. Are you going to change your mind?
No, I think for me, I can't get over the fact that he shouldn't be there.
Listen,
I don't think anybody will agree with me. Sorry, I don't think anybody will agree with me apart from Henry Lansbury.
Yeah, okay, mate. There's obviously some. He knows you're coming on the official EFL podcast, and he's had a word to say, for goodness sake, back me up, will you? Great to see you, Cops. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Clem.
That is it for another episode. A big thank you to James Coppinger and to Ben Brereton-Diaz. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.